This is Game Time AM. Now, back to Brad Lee and Jeff Jones from St. Louis Game Time on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Good morning. Welcome back. This is Game Time AM on 590 The Fan, KFNS 105.7 HD2, streaming live inside STL.com. I'm Jeff Jones, Matt Davis across the board, Chip Popp in the studio this morning. Man, I got nothing on that one, Matt. Should I know that one?
Yeah, I think you probably should.
Uh-oh.
Who? Soundgarden.
Okay, the voice sounded familiar.
Yep, Chris Cornell.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, oh, that wrecks the morning. That's okay. You know what? It doesn't wreck the morning. The music is here, Matt. The music is here. The music is here as a tribute, I guess.
I actually was outside and I came back in and I had enough time to open Spotify and
click on the first one.
The first song
I was. You know what? I was not gonna reveal that bit of radio magic. I was just going to assume that you needed to hear that particular Soundgarden song.
Nope, there was no strategy behind that one whatsoever.
You know, amusingly enough, As we rock out to the hard Soundgarden this morning, I was having a conversation on Twitter last night with a couple of guests we've had here on Game Time, a couple of repeat guests, in fact. Was talking to our friends Pat Iverson and Hannah Beavis last night on Twitter about the right kind of relaxing instrumental classical music to listen to, either to write to or to fall asleep to. So kind of the opposite of Soundgarden.
That's a question I've never asked.
It's also very good. Yeah, it's very good for focus, I think, when you're writing things, to have a little bit of background white noise.
Yeah.
Because when I come home from the radio show in the morning, I go home and I work in the morning and I'm writing when I'm working, and I have tried to have TMA on in the background as I work.
Uh-huh.
And that's just not happening.
Yeah,
it's not
too distracting.
Too distracting. Yeah, mm-hmm. It takes too much of my brain power up. So I have to find different.
So
and better
you just
things.
Pause the work and then just go with the TMA, right?
Sometimes I actually have been trying pretty hard to do the opposite, and I work in dead silence most of the time. So yeah. I really do want to find a happy medium between interesting things that take up all of my brain power, and the creepy dead silence in my apartment that is otherwise the. Otherwise the plan there. So we're gonna fire up the text box this morning because there are some concerns and questions at least about roster construction and what the Blues can do to better prepare themselves here as we go into this week of NHL expansion draft fun.
Are we going to get to Catfish's question?
We are.
He asked
indeed.
The same thing yesterday.
He asked the same thing yesterday and we didn't get there because we were too busy looking 8 years into the future. And in those 8 years into the future, we didn't mention Joel Edmondson, but he might still be here because a text from Catfish, the question says, how do we think Joel Edmondson is viewed around the league? Possible first pair defenseman, could he be an attractive trade piece to net a playmaking center?
Hmm.
Here is the thing with Joel Edmondson. His value will never be higher than it is right now because Joel Edmondson had a breakout playoff where he played extraordinarily well and was anchored to one of the team's best players. The pairing with him and Parayko was very effective, and you saw throughout the playoffs they got increasingly difficult matchups, and by the time that the Nashville series was over, they were drawing closer, I think, to Petrangelo and Bomis
right.
in terms of responsibility.
Can I make the argument that his value is much higher for the St. Louis Blues than it is for most of the other teams around the
you
league?
You absolutely can, because that's a totally fair thing to say.
I think the rest of the league maybe might not be as valuable to the other teams.
I think
for the Blues, I think he's pretty much a necessary need right now.
Yes, I agree. I agree with that entirely. I think around the league, Joel Edmondson is perceived as a number four defenseman, mm-hmm. a guy that you can reliably put on a second pairing to play 16 to 18 minutes a night.
Right.
And he's not going to hurt you. He's going to, you know, he can tough up once in a while if you need somebody to get a little muscly. But I don't think that the Blues have any kind of adequate replacement really in the system. I agree that there is not a lot of inherent value. I don't know. So when you're talking about Edmondson, here's a guy who I think is an interesting comparison is Brooks Orpik. Because Brooks Orpik is a guy who doesn't really have any kind of standout skill.
Right.
He's a big, meaty defenseman.
Very physical.
Very physical. sound positionally. Now as he's getting older, the foot speed is definitely going.
Yes.
But Brooks Orpik is a guy who made his bones and who made his name through playoff runs, through playing on those Penguins teams in 2009 and a little after, and developing this, you know, this reputation as a player who can play all of that sturdy back-end stuff, and he's a veteran leader, and he's not going to hurt you on the ice, and blah, blah, blah. By the way, he's hurting the Capitals now. He's making $5.5 million a year.
I was going to say, he was part of the problem with their playoff finish
and
this season.
Yes, and as a pairing with Shattenkirk was a disaster because the foot speed is gone. And, you know, Orpik is 36. So if you told Joel Edmondson he was going to have Brooks Orpik's career path, he would be thrilled because that's 12 more years in the league. Right, anybody would. And if you're the Blues and you knew that Edmondson was going to turn into Brooks Orpik, you would also be thrilled with that because that is a steady guy, right?
My biggest question with Joel Edmondson right now is really just consistency
and
during the regular season. He didn't stand out really that much during the regular season at all.
He did not. But I will say, as a corollary to that, him not standing out is probably good, right? Because a guy like that, a guy who you count on for that steady kind of defensive play, when you don't notice him, that's when he's playing well.
Absolutely. He didn't stand out for great reasons,
but
definitely didn't stand out for the bad ones.
Right, but on the other hand, he was scratched at least a couple times, I believe, wasn't he, during the season?
He was a few times, but I don't
think
frequently.
There was a couple
different
times throughout the season where his name did come up in discussions as far as needing to contribute a little bit more.
Right. So Edmondson played 69 games this season. Nice. And did have some injuries. I think he missed maybe about a month. He might have had a broken hand, broken foot, something monkish that kept him. It was earlier in the season. Edmondson missed a little bit of time with an injury. But I think it was primarily in there when he was healthy. He was probably a healthy scratch a couple of times, but I think that that's a guy going forward. And you know, look, for comparison's sake, Edmondson played 69 games last season. Robert Bortuzzo only played 38, right? So then obviously,
yes.
And now granted, Bortuzzo
probably
also had an injury.
Right. I think he would have ended up playing more if he wouldn't have had that early injury.
Yes. Carl Gunnarsson, 56 games played last season. So those are definitely the three guys.
It's trending the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah. What, trending towards zero?
Trending towards zero.
Yeah. But so those are your, you know, your five, six, and seven defensemen who you have those three guys playing for two slots, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's where Joel Edmondson fit on this team for most of the season, was the number five guy. And, you know, Shattenkirk leaves and it requires those guys to step up. And I do think that you saw the two guys that you saw really grow as Kevin Shattenkirk left this team at the end of the season were Alex Pietrangelo, who got more time on the power play and was able to display those offensive skills, and Joel Edmondson, who stepped up into more important ice time. I think that Edmondson established himself this season as a player who has, yes, I agree, a lot of value for the Blues moving forward. Now, the question with Edmondson is going to be whether or not he prices himself out for this team.
Is that really even a worry right now?
Well, when I say that, here's what I'm thinking of. Roman Polak, after his first couple of seasons with the Blues, signed an extension, like a two. And this is all from memory, so it's very, very rough, very vague in my mind. But signed a 2 or 3 year extension at around like $2.75 million or $3 million, right? Like a moderately sized deal for middle pairing defenseman was the kind of contract that you saw Roman Polak sign as he was coming out of his ELC here with the Blues. Joel Edmondson is probably going to be in that spot. I think he's making right at $1 million a year now. So his next deal, as I go back to cap friendly, and
he's restricted in 18.
There you go. So he makes $1 million a year now. Is that correct?
Yeah. $1,050,000.
There you go. So you're going to see another RFA deal with Edmondson, probably another bridge deal, another 2 or 3 year deal around. The next one probably is closer to 1.8, 2.2, assuming that he continues on the path that he's on now. When it comes 2020, 2021, will the Blues decide there are other players in the system that can fill that role for $800,000, right?
And quite possibly.
And so that's And that's but that so that's going to be where you get at that spot with Edmondson, where, you know, where he's 25, 26 and starting to make that, you know, starting to make the big boy money.
Right.
And finding himself maybe squeezed, even though it's a small amount, but squeezed a little. Text from the 636. Why did the Blues trade Ian Cole for Robert Bortuzzo with 3 question marks?
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, no. Pittsburgh knew Matt Davis?
Huh?
Pittsburgh knew?
Pittsburgh knew, I guess, yeah.
So actually, the news came out yesterday, I believe, that Ian Cole played the entirety of the Stanley Cup Final and the entirety of the Eastern Conference Final with a broken hand and broken ribs.
He broke
his hand and broke some ribs in the series against Washington. Played the entirety of the Ottawa series and the entirety of the series against Nashville with a broken hand and broken ribs.
I know it sounds sadistic, but that's what I love about this time of year. Is you start right after the Cup Finals ends, you start hearing about these guys that played on broken legs or broken ribs or separated shoulders.
What was it? Torn ACLs.
Patrice Bergeron in 2013 was like in intensive care when he was not playing on the ice. he literally had like a ruptured spleen or something. Like had one of those like if you keep playing, this will kill you kind of injuries. And Bergeron played. I mean, he played through the end of the Cup Final with the Bruins. Like, yeah, it's crazy. And so, okay, so the question, why did the Blues trade Ian Cole for Robert Bortuzzo? That happened because Ken Hitchcock did not trust Ian Cole and he was not going to get a shot here. Whether or not that is a good reason is up for discussion, but the reason is because it was not happening with Hitchcock.
Right.
And
at that point in time, for whatever reason, Robert Bortuzzo better fit what the coach wanted than Ian Cole did.
I guess. But the things that you got from Bortuzzo or that you talked about getting from Bortuzzo were, you know, a guy who was solid positionally and a guy who was physical.
Mm-hmm.
That's all stuff that Ian Cole does for the Penguins now, right? And so maybe
he didn't do that for the Blues.
So the question, the conversation is, does Ian Cole change his game when he gets to Pittsburgh and realizes that this is what I have to do to stay in the league? Like, is the trade the point where Ian Cole wakes up and says, I'm never going to be Kevin Shattenkirk, so how do I stay in the league and how do I alter my game? Or did he always have that? I don't know.
I would lean towards that he always had that. He just never had the opportunity to show it.
I agree.
With the Blues whatsoever.
There was,
if they would have put him in the lineup consistently and gave him a shot, a real shot, then I think we could have had the Pittsburgh version of Ian Cole.
There were very few times when Ian Cole was playing for the Blues that you would see him on the ice and feel like he was a liability. Like he was a solid enough defenseman. And you know, his last year here, the year he was traded, he played 54 games for the Blues that season, put up a +16, but was only getting, you know, 15 minutes of ice a game. And you know, they make the trade for Bortuzzo. They have Jordan Leopold early in that season, and then Leopold gets traded at the end of the year. But you know, that was the deadline where they went out and they got Zdeněk Mihalik. You know, they needed whatever. Yeah. They needed a plug, I guess. And so they went and they got Mihalik. But Terry Lindbom got 23 games that year. There was a shuffle at the bottom end of the defensive pairings. Yes. For whatever reason, the Blues would rather have seen 21-year-old Lindbom and Mihalik and a little bit of Jordan Leopold. All of those guys the Blues preferred to see to giving Ian Cole a shot to take the job and go.
Right. But at the same time, I think that maybe, you know, I don't know what his numbers were, ice time numbers were with Pittsburgh when he first got there, but in a sense, burying him on the third pairing with, I mean, who would have been his partner then? A Terry Lindbom?
Gunnarsson for a lot part of the year. Chris Butler played 33 games for the Blues that year.
That might not have been the best situation to put him into in the first place.
Right. So upon being traded to Pittsburgh in 14-15, his ice time jumped from an average of 15.03 with the Blues to 18.29 with the Penguins. The Penguins piled on an extra 3 minutes a game. That's second pairing minutes that he got when he went to
Pittsburgh.
And then
you started to see the growth.
Yeah.
You know? And that's an argument that can be made, is not every player is going to learn the same way. You know, there's some players that, they can learn and practice what they need to do, and they can take it to a game and do it. There's other players that maybe they need to be in the game consistently so that they can learn from these games and then put it together for the next game.
And you know what,
move forward gradually that way.
And this is back to the Cardinals briefly. This is what they're trying to figure out with Randall Grichuk, is does he grow by letting him just sit in the lineup and
yeah.
and work it through, or do you just have to cut bait at some point, right? I don't know.
I'm honestly a little bit surprised that they haven't just, you know, scrapped that project by now.
It's because the ball looks so good. When he makes contact, the ball looks so good jumping off his bat.
And I've said this before, I hate to say it again, but you cannot have a left fielder that you have to send down to the minor leagues once a season.
No, you're right.
You just can't do it. And this is, we've already talked about how much time he's spent here. This isn't just, you know, we'll see what happens. This is, okay, we're going to drag this out for multiple years.
Yeah.
And it's still not working, so just do something about it.
Yeah, it sucks.
They did do something about it, I guess, send him to the minor leagues, but it's not helping. It's not really helping him, I'm sure. It's not really helping the Cardinals.
By the way, that 14-15 Blues team, that's only two seasons ago, and it is amazing how much has changed in those two seasons. Would you believe me if I told you that both Ty Ratty and Martin Brodeur played for that team?
Yes.
That was an overlap. It is crazy to think that overlap existed between Ty Ratty and Martin Brodeur. Martin Brodeur, seven games as a St. Louis Blue, but I was at, you know, this is actually, this says, oh, I'm sorry, I was looking at the wrong column, my apologies. I thought it said no shutouts, it actually said no overtime losses. I was at the singular Martin Brodeur shutout as a member of the St. Louis Blues. Shut out the Florida Panthers. Yes, indeed. And I was there to see it in person. I wrote a column for Game Time about, because that was another year where the middle months of the season got a little dark and depressing. But
yeah.
I saw Martin Brodeur play for my favorite team and he had a shutout, and that was pretty neat. I
don't think the significance of that, of him even playing for the Blues, ever really hit me the way it should have.
Yeah, it's hard because I think it was very obvious that it was kind of like, it's kind of depressing, right? The Blues needed a goalie. Brodeur was not in a position, I think, mentally or emotionally where he was ready to be done.
He had pads, though, so.
He did have pads, put up a rocking .899 save percentage in the seven games, and then immediately went to become the assistant GM. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Game Time AM here in 590 The Fan, KFNS 105.7 HD2, streaming live on InsideSTL.com. First 20 minutes of this hour, talking lots of heavy Blues talk. First hour was all Cardinal baseball, so we're heavy on the sports today, so if you need hot sports talk action, you are in the right place. I'm Jeff. That's Matt. Chip's here this morning as well. We've got all sorts of breakdown. Yeah, what's up?
Let's jump over to Ward Cleaver's text. He also texted the same thing yesterday.
Yes, the question about Wayne Simmons.
Wayne Simmons, yeah.
So
why not?
Because the Flyers aren't going to trade him. That's why not.
Great reason.
Wayne Simmons, yes, is a player that I would love to have here playing for the St. Louis Blues, because he would also fit very nicely into that second line right wing slot.
Oh, yes.
Or, you know, or whatever, into a top six spot where the Blues desperately need that kind of forward. And he represents a net front presence on the power play. He scored 30 goals last season. Wayne Simmons is everything that you want out of a strong power forward. And by the way, Wayne Simmons is a great, Wayne Simmons is a great guy in the community. It is heavily engaged in youth organizations in Philadelphia, is a big part of that team. And that's why he's not getting moved. He is a very good player who is very meaningful off the ice as well to the Philadelphia Flyers and to their involvement in the community. And there's just no way that the Flyers are willing to move him. It would have to be, you know, yesterday someone texted, and I think possibly, or maybe it was Brad on the phone, was talking about Claude Giroux and rumors of him being traded out of Philadelphia. The reason that you hear those rumors about Giroux and not about Simmons is because Simmons is way too valuable to that team. Now, he is a free agent after the 18-19 season, so only two more years to go before Wayne Simmons reaches free agency. But when he does reach free agency, he is going to cash in big time on one of those like David Backes deals where it's going to be 6 years at $6 million. Should the Blues be pursuing him in 2 years as a free agent? Yeah, sure. Look, 2 years is a long way away. If he doesn't have some sort of disastrous injury between now and then, that's a guy who makes a ton of sense for the Blues to go after. But I don't think in the interim you're going to be very successful at prying him out of Philadelphia, because I don't really know what their incentive would be to move him. Like the Flyers also, we should keep in mind, the Flyers hit gold in the draft lottery. They moved up from, I believe, pick 13 to pick number two. They picked second overall in the NHL draft. The draft lottery, we talked about it briefly, but we did not cover the extent to which the draft lottery was utterly bananas this year, because the three teams that got drawn out of that lottery all had very long odds. I think New Jersey went from 5-1, Philadelphia went from 13-2, and Dallas went from like 9-3.
Yeah, something 9-3, 11-3, somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere like that. So there were definitely like the draft lottery was nuts. And puts team, you know, the Flyers were not that far out of a playoff spot. They you know, without looking at the standings, they were somewhere within like 5-ish points of a playoff spot. And they're going to add Nolan Patrick or Nico Hischier to that team. That's huge for them. Like that's an absolute boon.
Does that make Claude Giroux or another center of theirs expendable?
That's why you hear the conversation. It's because they're going to be able to draft a really, you know, be able to draft so high, and they will, one way or another, they will be getting a, I don't know. You hear people say that this draft doesn't have like the kind of top end talent, and what they need, you know, it doesn't. There's not an Austin Matthews in this draft. There's not a Connor McDavid in this draft. There's probably not a Jack Eichel in this draft. Yeah, right. A guy like Hischier and a guy like Patrick is a guy. Yeah, that's a 15-year center.
Quality future NHL players.
Yes, exactly. Guys that you would be more than happy to have for sure.
Is the other reason, Jeff, why his name keeps popping up is because he's making $8.2 million a year.
That is also part of it, but that would,
for the next five, I believe.
Yep. Yes, indeed. And by the way, I should correct myself. Carl Carlson texting in to say that he shut out the that Brodeur shut out the Avs and not the Panthers. I would have bet heavily that it was the Panthers, but no, indeed, it was the Colorado Avalanche. I am misremembering, because his first home game as a Blue was against Florida. I was at both. That was what I had wrong.
Okay,
he did.
I was gonna say. So were you at the Florida?
I was at both. But he beat the Panthers at home. He only played two games in St. Louis. I was at both of them.
Nice.
Won the home game in his home debut against the Panthers, and then shut out the Avalanche. So thank you, Carl Carlson. You are indeed correct, sir. I would have lost that. I was willing to make a bet. I would have lost that bet for sure. There you go. Yeah. There you go. Text from Catfish asking if I've heard any talks on the radio as far as acquiring a Russian player from the New Jersey Devils, Ilya Kovalchuk. So the Kovalchuk situation is also pretty interesting. And the Kovalchuk situation, by the way, plays into some of the expansion draft talk that we've been hearing recently. So the Columbus Blue Jackets look like they probably have a deal together that will involve sending David Clarkson to the Vegas Golden Knights, along with probably a first-round pick in exchange for the Knights drafting a player of Columbus's choosing, or not draft. The name that I've seen associated is Josh Anderson, that Columbus in fishing out their protection scheme basically wants the Knights to not draft Josh Anderson, and so they are going to send pieces of value to Vegas to make that happen. Now, the reason that this is related is because David Clarkson is never going to play again in the NHL. He has a degenerative back condition, and he's not going to be healthy enough to play. And so if you have his contract, you're responsible for paying him, but during the season he goes on long-term injured reserve, so he's not sucking up space against your salary cap. In the off-season, however, he does eat up salary cap space. Now, you're allowed to exceed the cap by as much as 10% in the off-season, so long as you have it addressed by the beginning of the season. But if you are the Columbus Blue Jackets and you're looking to add a player like Ilya Kovalchuk, then that off-season salary number matters a lot. And so the thought in offloading Clarkson's salary to Vegas is that it gives you room to add a significant player in the off-season. And that is what they're probably looking to do with Kovalchuk. All the speculation around why Columbus would care enough to ship off Clarkson's contract has to do with Ilya Kovalchuk. And so have you heard that rumor attached to the Blues? Yeah, sort of. I don't know that you hear it for many other reasons besides... Well, okay, so there are two reasons, I guess. Number one, the Blues have a positional fit. Again, Kovalchuk is a top six right wing and scores a bunch of goals. So that's a player that has use for the St. Louis Blues. Number two, Kovalchuk was in New Jersey with Martin Brodeur.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a natural speculation point, because I think people are struggling to figure out where does Kovalchuk fit for any team. So you turn back to who are his teammates, who does he have connections to, and that's where you land. You land on the Blues.
A team that has money, though, is going to be a fit for Ilya Kovalchuk.
Yes.
Okay, he's going to fit just about anywhere that can afford to pay him. And that's my thing with the St. Louis Blues and bringing Ilya Kovalchuk on board. I think right now, according to Cap Friendly, what I'm looking at here,
yeah,
shows the Blues having $4.4 million in cap space,
right,
projected cap space. Okay, now, we've already talked about yesterday that they need to re-sign Colton Parayko this offseason.
Yep.
Well, it's going to take every bit of that $4.4 million, if not more, to get that done, most likely.
Yes.
Say they're able to toss Laterra out to Vegas or somebody else and get rid of that. That gives them $5 million. Well, still, that could be part of Pareko's contract eating into that $5
million. Right.
And the remaining, even if you have the full five, is not going to pay for an Ilya Kovalchuk, which means they would still have to shed more salary in order to bring him on board.
And keep in mind that the Blues only have 12 forwards under contract right now.
They've only got so many people that they can really shed to gain salary space.
Yes.
They're not going to be able to do it without creating a hole.
And we talked about this, you know, earlier in the summer. It's hard to have a lot of roster churn for the Blues right now because there just aren't guys on expiring contracts. The only player that's included right now in that cap number on Cap Friendly, so projecting $4.4 million in cap space, the only player that's projected right now that definitely won't be on the team is Luke Opelka, because technically he has an NHL contract.
Right.
So as a third goalie, he's included there. But that's, you know, a hair less than $700,000. So, okay, so even if you add that number back in, that gets you to $5.1 in cap space right now for the Blues. You signed Parayko to, you know, now granted, we talked about the Shane Gostisbehere spirit deal. That's 4.5.
If we get Parayko for less than $5 million, it's a miracle.
Yeah. So
I believe that.
Let's call it 5.25, right? Let's say 5.25 is the number you anticipate for Parayko. That already has you about $100,000 over the cap, and you still have to sign an extra defenseman and an extra forward at least, right? So
it means very difficult.
Yes, and so you have to, like.
So what are some contracts that they could send out to get cap?
Well, and so here's the thing: they are going to lose a player in the expansion draft.
Uh huh.
Assuming that probably the least expensive deal that they would lose in that draft is Kyle Brodziak's, right? Kyle Brodziak is only making $950,000 next season, so that is the smallest contract that they would potentially lose in the expansion draft.
Okay.
Now, Carl Gunnarsson at 2.9, that means you're replacing a defenseman, but you can probably replace Gunnarsson directly with a guy like Dunn or Schmaltz.
I really can't imagine Vegas wanting to take a Carl Gunnarsson unless it's just that's a $3 million hit that we need to go ahead and add to our payroll.
So the reason
to meet the salary cap.
The reason that they would take a guy like Gunnarsson is because they would look at the other players available from the Blues and maybe not anyone else. Right.
Okay.
And Gunnarsson has an extra year on his deal, right? So you're not taking, for example, David Perron, who is a free agent immediately after the 17-18 season.
What's he making, 2-something?
3.75.
Oh, wow. That's more than I thought. Wow.
Yeah, so that's the number
that's
on David
Perron.
Yeah, so
what's really disappointing to me about it, honestly, is we could have had Berglund's contract off the books completely. Alex Steen as well could have been off the books completely. That would have been a nice chunk of money to go out and get somebody different, try to upgrade, try to just change it up and bring in somebody that's going to add something different. Ilya Kovalchuk could have fit in this team perfectly with the savings of Steen and Berglund no longer being on the roster.
The Steen deal is more bothersome to me than the Berglund deal. I
don't see how you can really. Well,
I know.
Differentiate between the two, please.
I know.
They're both disturbing.
Well, the differentiation is the number, because Berglund is making $1.9 million less than Alex Steen. That's it. I mean, right, because of the amount
in itself,
of savings.
Isn't it that Berglund's only making, or he's making $2 million less than Steen? That's pretty.
I don't. I mean,
horrible.
I think that I saw this metric somewhere. I would have to go back and look at it, but I think roughly the number that you see with NHL contracts is every 10 goals for a forward costs you $2 million. Is roughly the measure. So by that, Berglund is close-ish to where he needs to be, right? So at 3.8 million, you're talking about 16 to 18 goals, which is what you're going to get from Patrick Berglund.
I don't really want to have this conversation.
I know.
Sounds like you're trying to justify the contract.
Well, but
Berglund.
my point is, where that value system breaks down is Paul Stastny, because Paul Stastny making $7 million and he's not going to score 35 goals.
Right.
He's also not putting up 70 points. Right. That's not happening.
That's not an all-encompassing what do you want to call it, rule?
Right. Yeah. That's not. Whatever. Yeah. That's not. Right. That's not. That's not like a golden thing that you should measure by. But right. I think it's a reasonable way to deal with, you know, players who are not on their entry level deals, players who are on a right. post entry level deal. $2 million for 10 goals is I think a reasonable metric that allows you to sort of figure out where you're at with forwards.
Okay.
So Alex Steen, for example, at 5.7, is he going to score 28 goals next season?
No.
That to me is why it's a problem.
I think it's a fair question now to ask, is he going to score 20 goals next season?
That's fair. Yeah, I agree. I agree.
I think the wheels are falling off.
Well, and the wheels are falling off, and he signed through his age 37 season.
Smart. Right. Smart.
And we just extended him at age 32 or 33. That's...
Mm-hmm.
And that is why.
But we don't like to give out long-term big money contracts to aging veterans, right?
But again, there's another reason why the Steen deal to me is worse than the Berglund deal, is because Steen goes through his age 37 season and right. Berglund goes through his age 34 season.
Right.
That to me is, you know, that means you're covering whatever Patrick Berglund's prime looks like. You're covering
it.
You've got that 45 mile an hour cruise all the way
Berglund's
through.
Berglund's prime looked a lot like his not prime.
But you know what? It does. It looks the same. And every year it looks the same. He scores between 15 and 20 goals. He puts up between 35 right. and 40 points.
In a lot of ways, you could perhaps argue that his rookie season was his prime.
I mean,
and
you,
it's mostly well, it been downhill season. From there.
No, I mean, you could for sure make that argument. Yeah.
Anyway, my point being, that's how much... Okay, so 5, 8... So we'll say $9 million and change between those two players that could have gone a different direction. And now we're that direction isn't available. It isn't easily available now.
It could have gone a different direction. However, we also need to keep in mind that you have to fill roster spots too. Now, obviously, you can sign filler for substantially cheaper.
Right.
But... You know, does that mean that you're trusting, I don't know, Tage Thompson to just sort of hop on in and fill the role that, you know.
Now, you know, that's a name I've been hearing a lot about from people. Tage Thompson, what's he going to be able, is he going to be able to come in and make the big team? What is the Blues' perspective on him? Do they have any expectations of him coming in and contributing in any kind of way next season?
I don't think that because all things are related... I think that if you had asked the Blues 6 months ago what they thought was the best scenario for Tage Thompson going into next season, and actually, uh-huh. I have to look to see whether or not, because Tage Thompson signed out of the NCAA, he signed out of the NCAA, so he's eligible to play in the AHL even if he's going to be 19 all of next year.
Right.
I think that Tage Thompson was probably not in the plans for being on the big club 6 months ago.
Okay.
Because the Blues no longer have a reliable AHL affiliate, I do wonder if that means that Tage Thompson is more likely to stick as a 14th forward type and spend a large part of the year in the press box and play 20 games.
That would be horrible.
It would not be
for
great.
That to happen
it
to
would
him.
Not be great. But I do wonder if that, you know, maybe 20 games is the wrong explanation. But say, for example, a good comparison would be David Perron's rookie season, his 19-year-old season when he stuck with the Blues and played whatever it was, 50, 55 games, and had long stretches of being a healthy scratch and figuring himself out here, because Perron had sort of skilled himself out of the queue, but they weren't really, you know, wasn't really a spot for him. You know, there's a whole thing. I do wonder if Tage Thompson slots into that position. That would be a thing that... I say that would be a thing that makes some sense, not because it is the way that you would best develop a player, but given the situation that the Blues have created for themselves.
Are we past the point of doing what's best for his development as far as doing something for necessity, basically?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess there are a couple of schools of thought there, because there are probably some players who do benefit from being around the team at 19 and having that level of, you know, direct involvement in day-to-day operations.
Yeah.
I don't know that Tage is one of those guys, because, you know, you hear he grew up around the game or whatever, but I mean, he did. I mean, his dad is a longtime minor league player and a minor league coach, and this is not a guy who's unfamiliar with the atmosphere.
Right.
So I don't know that necessarily, maybe he's better off playing 80 games for, I don't even, the Manchester Monarchs or wherever the hell they lend him to for next season. But
my train of thought on this is that you have to play to get better. Okay, hockey is hockey across each level. There's differences and you have to be on the ice to learn those differences.
Right.
You have to be on the ice to learn how to play that game. I don't think most players are doing – I don't think teams are doing their players any good if they bring them up and sit them in the press box.
That's fair.
You know, and I think the Blues did it with some guys way too much last season.
Yeah.
And I'm highly annoyed by it.
A couple of texts I want to get to, and if you want to text in, it's 855-282-8255, 855-282-8255. One from the 314 says, how has no one questioned Doug Armstrong with these ridiculous contracts he hands out? I disagree with the premise. I think Doug Armstrong has been questioned on these deals, and I think that, you know.
I've questioned him.
Yeah, right. People, right. Anything, it does count. He gets asked the questions. He might not give you the answer that you want to hear, because I don't know what the answer is that you want to hear. Yeah, I messed up. I mean, what is the answer from – right?
He wouldn't say that even if he felt it.
Exactly.
I don't believe he thinks he has messed up.
Well, and that's also –
that's my worry.
That's
my whole worry about all of this, is I don't think that they realize that they've made mistakes and that they're continuing to make mistakes.
And that
they're compounding mistakes with more mistakes.
And that bleeds into the second text I wanted to read from the Fenton Fur Trapper, which says, this particular conversation is the exact reason the Blues will not win a Stanley Cup in the near future. Armstrong signing of aging marginal players does nothing to increase the team's chances to contend for the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
That is a reasonable position that it is very hard to argue against.
It is hard to argue against. Very hard. You know, but like I was saying a couple weeks ago, it seems like the general narrative among the fan base, and it's coming from management, is that it's not that bad. We're pretty close. We're really close to making a push.
Right.
All this stuff. And I don't believe it. I really don't. Look at our cap situation. Look at our roster. Just all of it just to me says, uh-oh.
The thing that I try to keep in mind when trying to do the whole like sober evaluation thing with this team is, as a Blues fan, is there a level of conditioning that makes you feel more negative than is justified, right? I think that in some cases, fans are overly optimistic about their teams.
Right.
I wonder if a history of failure makes Blues fans unduly pessimistic.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it can, for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so I do try to hedge against that a little bit, because when I look around the league,
I think it's warranted here. I really do.
That's the balance I'm trying to strike, is you look around at least the division. For example, Chicago is now in a spot where, like, they're no longer going to be able to do that thing where they trade one player in the offseason and then win the cup every year. They have now not gotten out of the first round 2 years in a row. They got swept this year. It looks like they're going to be dealing off, you know, certainly Kruger is leaving. They're going to lose TVR as part of that.
Right.
It looks like they're going to have to still deal off Jarmelson as well.
So what point are you making with
this?
So
the point I'm making is that other teams have these same struggles. These are not solely indicative of just a Doug Armstrong problem. This loyalty problem,
that's true,
seems to exist around the league. So,
but with the Chicago Blackhawks, there's one major, major, major difference.
Or three major, major differences.
Three major, major differences. They did what they had to do to win the Stanley Cup, and now they're dealing with the aftermath of that. And it happens to most teams that go out there and do it. Pittsburgh Penguins are the only team that seemed like they know how to win cups and still not be hamstrung with the salary cap.
And with the Blues are in that aftermath period, but they didn't win one.
Right, exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
Because this is where you know, this is where the Boston,
Western Conference Finals was our Stanley Cup, and now we're on the downtrend.
And this is where the Boston Bruins were, for example, 3 years ago, right? This is where, you know, where the Bruins ended up with lottery picks because they were in the same sort of situation. And now and now the Bruins are back on the rebound, but I'm trying to think of teams that had to basically go through this. You know, this, we made a run and didn't get there, so now we have to rebuild it anyway. Vancouver is an example of a team that went on a deep run, didn't win, and now they're tearing it down. And Vancouver's been in the middle of a rebuild for a number of years now. I mean,
but here's the thing, that's the difference between trying to actually go for a full rebuild or trying to, you know, try to patch things up here and there without accepting, okay, we have to take a serious step back in order to push forward. And the Blues don't seem like they want to do that.
I think that the hesitation that you see from the Blues in terms of what constitutes a full rebuild is twofold. Number one, the business suffered big time the last time they did that. It was a huge whack to the dollar sign end of the operation. Number two, I think that when you really truly tear it down, you run the risk of it taking way too long to build back. And my example here is the Edmonton Oilers. The Oilers are now an exciting team to watch with a ton of young talent. It took them 10 years to get there, and they had some pretty big misses along the way.
Well, the biggest difference there is you have to have the right guy in charge making decisions, you know?
Right.
And not just the right guy. You have to have the right team of guys between the general manager, the coach, scouting director, all of it. And they have to be working together to the same goal.
So, okay.
Edmonton was just chaotic and sporadic and just scattered.
Okay. Do the Blues have the right guy in charge? Would you want Doug Armstrong to be?
Right. Well, and that's another point. And that kind of feeds into why, you know, I feel the way I do about all this is it just seems like this could happen and we could turn it around a little bit, but I don't trust Doug Armstrong or, you know, move forward. And it's all just jumbled.
Text from the 636 says Chicago signs superstars. Blues sign older players because they're afraid of change.
I think they are afraid of change.
I think Doug Armstrong
is afraid of change. I think Doug Armstrong has bought himself job security by putting out their playoff teams that will make the playoffs years.
Yep, play it safe.
I do want to say I don't agree with the premise that Chicago has been like super active on the free agent market or something, right? That's not been their thing. They have signed their own superstars because they have to help them. But the Blues have done that. I mean, the Blues have given Tarasenko the big deal to the extent that you can, you know, the Blues' best players have gotten those deals. Now, Tarasenko and Pietrangelo are not on, you know, from a success perspective, not on the Jonathan Toews level. And from a skill perspective, they're not Patrick Kane either. But the Blues have taken their best players that they have developed and signed them to the same kinds of long-term deals that the Blackhawks have with Kane and Toews. But by the way, that Toews the Kane contract is bad enough. The Toews contract is a huge problem.
I think the Kane contract is a lot more understanding than the Toews contract.
Yeah,
I would take Vladimir Tarasenko over Jonathan Toews any day.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That one's not even close.
No matter what.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
And that's a $2.5 million difference.
I don't even know that there are Blackhawks fans that would take Toews over Tarasenko. I mean, that one to me isn't close at all.
His biggest value, in my opinion, is that he's a center.
Yes. And leadership, Captain Serious, and all that.
He's obviously a good leader, but he's a center. And you take away that center, and he's not really important to most people.
But the point, my point there is that Chicago, you know, has kept their players. The Blues have kept their players. The Blues do appear to be afraid of change, whether that's because they overvalue the Berglunds of the world.
Well, they do, or and because that's they obvious. Don't, you know, They overvalue him on top of the fact that, and I brought this up a month ago or so, they can make these moves and bring back these players that have shown that they will make the playoffs with these guys. Okay, well, we're going to take that, and we're going to count that as a win. We don't have to take any major risks.
Right.
We don't have to take any major pushes to do anything different. We're going to make the playoffs. We're going to be content with that. We're going to cross our fingers and hope we can luck into a Stanley Cup.
I'm going to read this text from the 314 because I think Matt is right on the verge of exploding. So I'm going to go ahead and read this text from Gibby that says that, why don't you two crying little B-words go hang out in Nashville? The Blues will never be good enough for you.
Hey, if the Blues are good enough for you, then that's all fine.
The Blues will be good enough for me when there's a parade.
Right.
That's kind of where I'm at, right?
I don't understand how are you going to get mad at me for being upset that they can't win the cup.
Yeah, I'm not angry in the meantime. Like, I'm not. No one's in here holding them accountable.
I'm not always angry. I get angry when we actually talk about it.
Part of fandom is being frustrated. Yep. And right now as a Blues fan, I don't think enough people are frustrated.
Right. I really don't. I don't think people understand that we're not as close as they think they are.
Yeah. Text from the 618 says Armstrong's misses also include not listening to his players on who to target, i.e. Panarin and Toews. Mm-hmm. Oshie and 91 suggested and argued for both. So I'm going to break those down into two pieces. First, the Oshie-Toews thing. That one, I have in retrospect, would you rather have Jonathan Toews and Eric Johnson? Of course. At the time, I don't think that there is anyone who saw anybody. And in fact, the only player in that draft that was considered possibly an alternate selection to Eric Johnson was not Jonathan Toews, was Jordan Staal. Jordan Staal was the other guy in that conversation in 2006. Now,
but the Blues went with their biggest need, which was a defenseman.
Right. And at the time, Eric Johnson was the consensus number one player. And also at the time, I have a really hard time faulting. Well, okay. First of all, Doug Armstrong was not running. He was not even part of the organization in 2006. Right. So we should start with that as well. But I also have a hard, just, you know, I have a hard time faulting Larry Plough and John Davidson for not listening to 19-year-old TJ Oshie, who had just gotten caught peeing in an elevator. Right? Like, that's not, maybe that's not the guy that you necessarily trust with your development thing.
Probably a good strategy.
The Panarin Tarasenko thing, yeah, that's a problem. I mean, like, yes, that's a miss. I mean, that's just a miss. That was a scouting miscalculation by the Blues.
It happens.
You're not going to hit on everything.
Situation. It doesn't matter if it's Tarasenko or TJ Oshie. It doesn't matter. You're not going to be the GM of a team and say,
you don't get everything right.
Okay,
right.
You know, yes, you don't just go get guys because your players want these.
You
guys.
You definitely cannot run a business
right
that way.
On the other hand, it would have been a fantastic risk for him to say, okay, well, let's give him a shot.
Yeah. Boy, would it be nice to have a free Panarin here. Right. Yes, that would be swell. Text from the 618 says, the Blues don't understand the idea of replacement-level players. Bottom six wings are the definition of replacement-level players, yet the Blues waste cap space paying for those guys.
Exactly.
The team that just won the Stanley
Cup. That's another way of saying easily replaceable, right?
The team that just won the Stanley Cup has guys on their bottom six wings that are like all on ELCs. The Scott Wilsons of the world and the Brian Rusts and the Connor Sheerys, all of those guys are, and again, this goes back to what we talked about yesterday, third, fourth, fifth round mid-level draft picks, guys that can contribute and play in the league and can play on those entry-level deals. And the Blues have whiffed on all, and so what happens when you whiff on those mid-level picks is that you have to go sign free agents because someone has to play there.
Right.
Because your choice is, if your choice is pay David Perron $3 million to play on that wing or put Ty Ratty there, I think I'd pay David Perron. I mean, right? Like, yeah, that's, I mean, I think if that's your choice, that's what you've got because those are the guys that you have
unless
in the system
the
to work with.
Unless the prospect development had worked a little bit better and turned Ratty into a guy you could use for cheap that could
jump
in.
So maybe if Ty Ratty hadn't sat in the press box, that, again, yes, there are there when you
honestly,
start pulling the threads.
If you put Ty Ratty on the third line right wing spot, for 82 games over the course of a season, I really think that he had a shot to get a 15-20 goal season.
Well, and we've come a little full circle back to Ian Cole.
Yes.
Is this an issue with not giving players a chance or your development being a massive problem?
Right, and not identifying the guys who need to develop in a certain way. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Text from the 618 says, a defenseman should never be the number one pick in the draft. I don't necessarily agree with that. What I will say is that you're definitely the defensemen who are number one picks are definitely the low ceiling, high floor kind of guys.
I'm
right?
really curious who these
do you
guys
know, safe?
Are.
Hmm?
What do you know? We're back to the safe word.
Yeah, back to safe. The guys. So I'm going back through number one picks in my mind. Number one overalls since Eric Johnson. The only other defenseman that I can think of is Aaron Ekblad. Am I missing one?
Ooh,
I think those. Those are the only first overall picks that have been defensemen in the last, I don't know, 10 years or so. And actually, going back before Johnson, Crosby was 05, Ovechkin was 04, Marc-Andre Fleury was 03. So I mean, there have only been what, two defensemen taken number one overall in the last 20 years or so.
One of them was a giant miss.
It's
so
rare. Yeah. Now
50-50.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So, and you saw this with the New York Islanders the year that they had the number one overall pick and took John Tavares. Victor Hedman was in that conversation as well, and you know, again, Tavares wasn't really a gamble because Tavares had it was clear that he was going to be a superstar from a very young age. Yes, he's quite good. He would look pretty good here, but Victor Hedman, I mean, Victor Hedman is, you know, a fantastically good defenseman. Who, you know, who has all of the opportunity in the world. Abe Froman texting in to ask if Ty Ratty can knock down those pucks 20 feet in the air.
I don't think so. He's a short guy. He's pretty short.
I'm telling you, here's what I think Steve Ott's job should be during the training camp, because Steve Ott now is the new assistant coach. A
little wrinkle.
What do you do with Steve Ott? You buy Steve Ott a paintball gun.
Okay.
And you put Steve Ott on the bench. And every time something happens like that, like where David Perron leaps in the air to knock down a puck,
shoot him in the face.
Pop a pipe. Like, yeah, just something, right? Every time you see something ridiculous like that, Steve Ott's job.
I don't think a paintball gun is harsh enough.
Well, and I guess
you should be following them around on the ice with a stick. And
I guess if you have a full set of hockey pads on, the paintball gun is probably not going to do a whole lot.
Right.
That's probably,
you got to get their attention. Learn through pain, just whack them with a stick.
Text from the 618 says, if you go with the entry-level players, what's wrong with a Thompson, Kyrou, fill-in-the-blank third line? What's wrong
Those are the future.
Right.
sort of, and you don't want to throw him into this position without necessarily being ready for it.
And, yeah.
Those are two tiny guys as well.
Yes. You're not going to get a lot of physical play out of there. And, again, we talk about these guys with the Penguins that are on their entry-level deals that are playing on this third line. They're not 19. They're 23, 24. And that does make a pretty – that does.
That's a difference.
That is a big difference. There is a lot of physical maturity that happens
right
between those ages. And a lot of, you know, guys adding muscles. You know, Jordan Kyrou was like 160 pounds. Like, the, you know, he's
tiny fella.
Right, yeah. Tage Thompson's got that Zach Sanford giraffe look right. about him, right? They got muscle up, eat some sandwiches.
The size and physical stature of, I'm going to get injured a lot.
Yes, exactly. And that is what happens when you take those guys and put them in that position before they're ready. Now, right. that means
and we've already figuring seen out the Blues go through that too.
To be ready.
Drafting a bunch of guys and then bringing them in before they're ready. Now, Kyrou, Thompson, and whoever else could end up being better, but I don't want to find out by throwing them in a lineup when they're 19, 20 years old.
And by the way, what do you see from younger guys that are a little undersized that aren't yet physically aware of where they are on the ice? You see David Perron getting cold cocked by Joe Thornton and missing a year and a half out of his career. That's what you know, that's the kind of stuff but that you see happen.
You could also make the argument that the NHL is heading that direction anyway. Faster, speedy, and along with that is going to be, in some cases, smaller. So, you know, and look at Toronto. They've got a lot of these faster, younger, somewhat on the smaller side kind of guys.
Yeah.
And they put them in the lineup right away and it paid off big.
But what was the most notable free agent signing that Toronto made last summer? Yes.
I don't remember.
Matt Martin. Toronto went out and signed Matt Martin.
Defenseman?
No, he's a winger, fourth line winger. But his job is to punch faces.
Protect
and his entire role is to be around and to be a deterrent for guys
like
that.
Only the Blues had one of those kind of guys.
That's a fair point, touche. But you know, you look at the line construction, that's the reason you see Zach Hyman on a line with Austin Matthews. Hyman is there to sort of, you know, again, Hyman's a younger guy, but he is there to regulate those situations. That's why you see Marner on a line with like Kadri and Van Riemsdyk, guys that are veteran and are more involved in the play and can shield from some of that physical stuff. Mm-hmm. And the 618 texter who texted in to say that we're going back to the safe thing again, I don't think it's a matter. There's a difference between safe roster construction and safe planning for the future.
Right.
And I think that in the short term, it is important to protect the assets you have. In the longer term, it is important to be willing to gamble on guys in your organization who can grow.
Right.
Right.
It's a very fine line. It really is.
Yes.
But if you got guys that are going to be your future, you can't just throw them down a hole off the bat.
And I think what you've heard in this hour, in this conversation about how you build the roster is the conversation that you probably I don't know if our conversation is maybe as good as the one you hear in NHL front offices, but it's the same kind of conversation, right, where you can talk yourself into circles. Like Chip said, we came all the way back full around to Ian Cole, where you go, you talk through all of these development issues, and where do you find yourself? Exactly where you started,
right,
which is why it is a harder job, I think, than people realize. Coming to the end of Game Time AM this morning here in 590 The Fan, KFNS 105.7 HG2, streaming live on InsideSTL.com. 2 hours of hot sports talk, baseball in the first hour, hockey in the second hour, but fun to have Chip in this morning. He's going to be back on Thursday, I believe, to talk some U.S. Open. So if you're into golf, we're going to have that rocking out. Let's get into three stars this morning. Matt Davis, number three, who you got?
I'm going to go with Joe.
We're going to go Caller Joe?
Yeah, Caller Joe had a good call this
Caller
morning.
Caller Joe, third star this morning.
I usually like what he has to say, too. So
there you go. I do, too. Joe was a reasonable, rational man. Chip, second star of the morning. Who you got?
Wow, I was going to pick Joe, so Matt stole him out from under
there it
me.
Is.
I'm actually going to go with Matt Davis and his rant on the Blues.
There you go. Matt fired up this morning. Got it coming out for you. Number one star, I may as well be accommodating. We'll go ahead and give it to Chip coming in early this morning, ruining his summer vacation to come in and talk a little hockey with us. I know Matt and I had a good time, and I think it created a nice. It was a nice bulwark, I think, Matt, to have somebody in here to remind us that we got back to where we started.
I liked it.
It was good. It worked out well.
Thanks for having me, boys.
So, of course, anytime. We'll have you back on Thursday to talk a little golf. You've been listening to Game Time AM on 590 The Fan, KFNS 105.7 HG2. Streaming on InsideSTL.com, podcast on InsideSTL.com, podcast wherever you get your podcast. Team A is coming up next. I see a cat out there dressed up all fancy. Long day at the ballpark for him coming up. And we will see you back here tomorrow morning.